From WBUR Boston and NBR, I'm Linda Wertheimer, and this is On Point. For 70 years, NATO members have been committed to mutual defense and global stability, but since taking office, President Trump has called the alliance obsolete. He has repeatedly chastised other members for not paying their fair share. With the president at the NATO summit right now, a few weeks after he butted heads with allies at the G7 meeting and opposed new tariffs on Europe, it's no secret that tensions are running high. This hour, On Point, the NATO summit in Brussels. You can join us on air or online. What do you make of the president's hard line on NATO? Is he right that NATO is obsolete? Or is it vital for world stability? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. So to begin this conversation, we'll set the stage with a little sound. First, here's EU President Donald Tusk yesterday with some advice for the United States.
Dear President Trump, America does not have and will not have a better ally than Europe. Dear America, appreciate your allies. After all, you don't have that many.
And second, here is President Trump in his opening remarks at the summit this morning.
Many countries owe us a tremendous amount of money from many years back where they're delinquent, as far as I'm concerned, because the United States has had to pay for them.
For some help on understanding how this is playing in Brussels, let's go to the NATO summit. Joining me now is David Herzenhorn, chief Brussels correspondent for Politico Europe. You can find a link to his latest article, Trump Rips into Germany at NATO Chief Breakfast, at our onpointradio.org. David, welcome back to On Point. David? Okay. We have a great lineup for you. Among other people, we have Nicholas Burns, who is joining us via Skype from Westport, Massachusetts. He's a former NATO ambassador. He's now a professor at the Harvard Kennedy School. Nick Burns, you have been to a lot of these meetings. You have seen what goes on. Is what's going on now, is this a surprising event for you?
It's abnormal. It's not surprising if you look at what President Trump's been doing over the last several weeks. He's been bashing NATO, saying that it's obsolete, saying that it's a bad deal for the United States. He's been branding the European Union, NATO's sister institution, as a competitor to the United States rather than a strategic partner. He's launched a series of personal attacks against Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, the most important European leader. And I've just come back, Linda, from visits to four European countries. The big crisis in Europe right now is the populace, the anti-democratic populace who've taken over the governments of Hungary and Poland. They're inside the coalition government in Italy and in the Czech Republic. They don't believe in democracy. They believe in authoritarianism. Trump is supporting them against the true small d Democrats like Theresa May, the United UK Prime Minister, and Merkel. So there's a climate of mistrust. I think it's the most serious crisis that NATO has faced, frankly, because of poor American leadership under Trump in many decades.
Now, the president also said that he called Russia. He said Russia, well, how did he put it? The Germans are in, Russia is in control of the Germans, that he's making some very strong remarks about, as you said, about Germany. And now he's going into the group meeting where he's going to have some conversations with Angela Merkel. I mean, how bad is this, do you think?
Well, the personal relationships here are very bad. Merkel, who with Barack Obama and George W. Bush was probably their closest partner in Europe. They would talk weekly. Merkel hasn't talked to Trump in months by phone. The president's right to push two issues. One is the Europeans have been spending far too little on their defense for far too long. And secondly, he said this morning that he felt it was a mistake for Germany to have agreed to the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. This is where Gazprom, the Russian state gas company, will supply Germany with 70% of its natural gas needs.
Which and he makes, said, the president said, Germany a captive of Russia.
That's right. On the merits, the president's right on both of those issues. But on the optics And he's wrong, and he's not being fair, because on the first issue of defense spending, the allies have been increasing their defense spending for four consecutive years. They're responding to Putin's invasion of Crimea. They're responding to the Trump blandishments. But the trend lines are very positive on defense spending. On the second issue, look, the United States has relations with Russia, and President Trump, of course, has not criticized Russia for anything. Its interference in our elections, its invasion of Crimea. So to call Germany captive of Russia is an insult to Germany. It's an insult to Merkel. It looks to a lot of Europeans that the president's trying to sink Merkel, actually weaken her politically, because he doesn't think her brand of politics is his brand of politics. So my view, and I work for, you know, various presidents on NATO affairs. I was George W. Bush's ambassador to NATO. President Trump has reduced our influence with NATO, causing needless fights. He ought to declare victory on the defense budget issue because the news is good. And he ought to lead NATO and not just think he can bash it as critic in chief.
So we've now got back our David Herzenhorn from Brussels. He is the chief Brussels correspondent for Politico in Europe. Now, David, I wondered, what does NATO expect to be talking about? What was on their plan, their agenda?
Well, NATO certainly expected, it's great to be with you, to talk about spending. There was no doubt in anyone's mind that Trump was coming back to NATO headquarters, planning to push again his message of a need for an increase in military spending. It's a message that at times frustrates the allies, in part because, as you just heard, they have been steadily increasing their military spending, but also because there's a distinct feeling across the alliance, across Europe especially, that Trump doesn't actually understand how NATO financing works, that what he's calling for is for these allies to spend more on their own militaries, that when you talk about the U.S. spending 3.5% of GDP on defense, that's on all U.S. defense expenditures, not specifically on NATO. Now, what caught everyone by surprise was Trump's mixing in of the Nord Stream 2 project, this criticism, really remarkable criticism of Germany over an energy project, its involvement with Russia, even more remarkable because Angela Merkel has been perhaps the toughest leader vis-a-vis Russian President Vladimir Putin in recent years. So to suggest that Germany is captive to Russia was really a low blow in the minds of many here and kind of off anything that they expected to be dealing with at the NATO summit.
It was my impression that that the folks at NATO were going to basically praise the president for having started this off, that everybody is increasing the amount of money that they're spending on their own defense. Basically say to the president, you're succeeding, thank you very much, but that's not what's happening.
You know, and this is an issue across politics, right? Sometimes you have to learn how to win. Stoltenberg, the Secretary General, has been trying to convince Trump for some time now that he's winning on the spending fight and was prepared to have all that kind of positive messages you're describing, how many more billions of U.S. dollars are being spent by the NATO allies, that Trump's message is being heard. It's a message that was delivered by previous American presidents and maybe didn't get as much in the way of results. And for Trump, it's just never enough. I mean, what you heard this morning, it was remarkable. At one point, Stoltenberg describing how last year saw the biggest increases in defense spending by NATO allies in a generation. And Trump completely cuts him off and said, why was that last year? You know, and Stoltenberg is trying to appease him, saying, yes, you know, thanks in part to your leadership. But he wants to hear this over and over and over again, but then isn't prepared to say, okay, you know, he's succeeding and move on. You know, there's then a need to hit harder, hit further, push more, and again, pick up topics like Nord Stream that, you know, whatever the merits of his argument, there are many in Europe who agree with him that the Nord Stream 2 project is a problem, is not relevant to the summit that's going on today.
And one, of course, one of the things people always say, the diplomats always say, is that there's more than one way to talk about these things, and President Trump takes the sort of the rough road.
That's right.
Can I just ask, let me just go back to Nicholas Burns. One of the things that the president has said about the NATO alliance is that it's obsolete. Do you think he's right or right in some way that NATO is obsolete?
No, I think he's exactly wrong on that. Think of it this way, Linda. The defense of the United States and Canada is linked to the defense of Europe. That's how we've thought of it for 70 years. NATO is the defense of this country against a potential attack by Russia, against terrorists. NATO went into Afghanistan with us 17 years ago. and they're still there with us today. The NATO allies have been with us in fighting the Islamic State. The NATO allies are leading the fight in countries like Mali and West Africa against the terrorists there. The NATO allies have replaced the United States troops in Bosnia and to a large extent in Poland. And finally, our ability to project power into Afghanistan and the Middle East is because of the NATO air bases at Ramstein in Germany, Aviano in Italy, Incirlik in Turkey, and the NATO naval bases in Italy and Spain. This is a very successful alliance. And on the strategic question, how do you defend the United States? The core of it in the transatlantic area is NATO. And on top of that, the European Union's our largest trade partner and largest investor. So we're partners economically. And if we want to do anything about climate change or trafficking of human beings, all these big transnational issues, pandemics, the Europeans are our best partner, and they're Democrats. They're democracies. Russia and China are not. So NATO's anything but obsolete. Yeah. Barack Obama, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton all believe that NATO is highly relevant to this time, to the 21st century.
Let me go back to you, David. What has been the reaction to that? I mean, the Europeans are accustomed to thinking of themselves as the friends of the United States, that this is a great alliance, and now they're hearing different things from the president.
Well, a couple of points. One is that, remember, Trump apparently changed his mind on NATO being obsolete, and this was one of Stoltenberg's accomplishments, convincing the president last year, and he said it on TV in Washington at the White House. You know, NATO is no longer obsolete. But for Europe, this is really a dismaying experience, where they're seeing 70 years, and it is actually the 70th anniversary of Congress passing the Marshall Plan, what became the core rebuilding right. of Europe by the United States, and all the gratitude that flowed from that, and the goodwill, and the bedrock relationship that has framed the international
David?
Security order for 70 years. Yeah.
Thank you very much. David is Chief Brussels Correspondent for Politico Europe. Ambassador Nicholas Burns is also here. Please stay with us. We're discussing the NATO summit underway in Brussels, and you can join the conversation. I'm Linda Wertheimer, and this is On Point.
Planet Money tip number 17. Sometimes life is exactly like the movies.
T-minus 30 seconds.
They said T-minus.
Planet Money, a podcast about the economy and sometimes about rocket ships.
This is On Point. I'm Linda Wertheimer. We're discussing the NATO summit underway now in Brussels. What's on the agenda? What's at stake? And how President Trump's hard line with other alliance members plays out. You can join the conversation. Is NATO incompatible with the idea of America first? If the U.S. pulls out of NATO, who will fill the leadership void? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guests today are David Hersenhorn, Chief Brussels Correspondent for Politico Europe, and former NATO Ambassador Nicholas Burns. And now I'd like to bring in another voice. Joining us from Washington, D.C. is Bloomberg columnist Eli Lake. You can find a link to his latest article, NATO's Real Crisis is Turkey, Not Trump. Our website is onpointradio.org. Eli, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, let me ask you, what do you think of, first of all, of what happened this morning when the president took out after Angela Merkel and Germany and their relationship with Russia?
Well, substantively, I think it's a fair point that it's not good for Germany, it's not good for Europe, and it's not good for NATO for Germany to be more reliant on Russian natural gas. This, again, the problem is the context and the style. For Trump to make these remarks, in a public forum the way he has and in a way that is aimed at humiliating Angela Merkel, who's facing her own political difficulties, before his, face-to-face meeting with Vladimir Putin, given his own proclivities to at times praise Putin and to ask why Putin has been kicked out of the G8, it's somewhat baffling. And it does, kind of beg the question as to, why is Trump, even at odds with the rest of his national security cabinet, the rest of his government, which has pursued, I think, a fairly conventional and tough policy, minus, again, the president's rhetoric, when it comes to trying to contain Russia and supporting, the 70-year old transatlantic alliance. So it's somewhat baffling, even though, again, on the substance, it's, I think, fair to ask the question, is, you know, it's, you don't want Germany to be more reliant on Russian natural gas.
David Herzenhorn, could you just give us a little bit of your feeling about whether the Europeans actually think that what the president is doing now is signaling some kind of an end to NATO, what NATO has been? Are they concerned about that?
I don't think they're concerned about an end to NATO. They understand the American system well enough to know that Trump won't last forever, you know, at best another term and a half. So they're prepared to wait him out, so to speak. But Europe is feeling rather betrayed. Again, 7 years after the Marshall Plan, you know, this relationship is really in tatters. In 18 months, Trump has unraveled relationships that took decades to build. And they don't see what the larger purpose is in this, how it helps to see him embracing, you know, strongman leaders in North Korea or in Russia, but so uncomfortable with, you know, America's true friends and allies at NATO. And he's heard this message from the European Council President Donald Tusk, from Angela Merkel, from Emmanuel Macron. They've tried to convince and cajole and persuade him in all sorts of ways that, you know, America, the richest country on earth, is not a victim here. And in fact, you know, Western nations really appreciate and are grateful for American leadership over the decades. And he just doesn't want to hear it.
What do you think? Nicholas Burns, this is a different sort of presidential diplomacy, if we can call it diplomacy, because it has been sort of disruptive. What do you think? Is the president taking the United States down a path that we have never gone down? Or is there something else happening here? Is he finding that this method of talking to even the allies is working for him?
Well, I think the president's certainly acting in a way that no other post-World War II president has acted. We all know the president's highly transactional. That's not always a bad thing. He seems to be judging the Europeans just on two issues. How low is your defense budget? And what kind of trade surplus do you have with the United States? Now, Germany's got a low defense budget. That's their problem. And Germany has a surplus in trade with the United States. And Germany seems to be the epicenter of his concerns. He's not wrong on the issue of defense budgets. In fact, he's quite right about that. And he's in line with previous presidents. The question is, how much does he want to be effective or ineffective? Is he just making a show of bashing the Europeans to help himself with his own political base at home? Doesn't he care about the trust that's being lost between him and Merkel, between him and Prime Minister May of the UK? And I think that's the problem, that the allies do so much more for us than how we grade them on defense budgets and on trade. On 1,000 different issues, the Europeans are our best and most trusted allies. I named some of them before, climate change being the most prominent. And so American presidents should want to maximize their ability to work with them. If you have disagreements, a good rule in diplomacy, as in life, have those disagreements behind the scenes. Don't try to humiliate your partners publicly, as the president tried to do to Merkel and to Jens Stoltenberg, the NATO Secretary General, this morning. I think that's where the president is very ineffective on the global stage.
On the global stage, but maybe not on the local stage. Here's Dan, who is calling from Schenectady, New York, on line 3, and he agrees with the president. Dan?
Well, it's not. Hi, I'm here. I wouldn't say I totally agree or disagree. I think that the Gazprom deal in the North Sea, Merkel needs a plan B, C, and D, because the Russians were selling gas. I forget which country, next to Crimea and stuff, but they got the gas turned off 2 or 3 years ago and a few years before that, right in the middle of horrible winters. And the Russians got their way and got the prices they wanted, because they were literally people freezing to death or getting close to freezing to death because their gas was turned off. Okay, so Merkel wants to do the deal, and the Russians want to do it, I'm sure, big time, because it's good money. But they need to, the Germans need to balance that feeling that it's a good deal with the fact that they owe it to their population and their taxpayers to not get them in a pickle over the price of the gas and not have a good source of gas for a few months because of the Russians playing games.
So your impression is that the president is sort of operating in the way that he does sometimes. So he's talking about deals. He's thinking about deals. Now, Mike is calling from Bass Harbor in Maine. That's on line four. And he sees this as a sort of a scary move by the president, right?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. There was a wonderful article several months ago in The Atlantic. I think it was entitled, What Putin Wants. And what I'm not hearing people talk about is that it seems to me that Donald Trump is giving Vladimir Putin exactly what Vladimir Putin wants, which is the destruction of the economic, military, and cultural ties that has bound the United States, in fact, all of North America and Europe together since the end of the Second World War. And I'm curious about what your guests think about it, and I'll take the comments off the air. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Now let's go back to the three gents that we have assembled to talk to us about this. Nicholas Burns, former NATO ambassador, Eli Lake, who is a columnist at Bloomberg, and David Herzenhorn, who is chief Brussels correspondent for Politico Europe. I'm wondering if you think that if any of you think that the Europeans are in any state where they might think about just giving up on Donald Trump. Some of you, one of you suggested, I think it was you, Nick Burns, you suggested that they might just lay back and wait for it all to be over, but which it would not be the same thing. But do you see the Europeans thinking, we can't do this. We can't do this with this guy.
Well, the Europeans are starting to talk about what they call strategic autonomy. If the worst happened, and if President, let's say hypothetically, the president took our troops out of Germany and Italy, how would the Europeans survive? So they're beginning to plan for that. The answer is that right now we're symbiotically linked militarily and even economically with Europe. The Europeans could not provide for the defense of their continent without the United States. And I think most European leaders, if not all, understand that. And they're going to wait this out. They're going to make the best. They're trying not to antagonize President Trump, but he's testing their patience. And I think the answer here is to understand we're going to have differences with the Europeans. We always have. The difference here is that many of the European leaders, the prime ministers, the foreign ministers, believe that Donald Trump is frankly leaning towards the authoritarian governments in Europe away from the democratic ones, that he's choosing the authoritarian over the democratic. And that, I think, is the worst thing that's happened to weaken American influence in Europe.
Eli Lake, what's your view?
Well, I think that Ambassador Burns is generally right, that at this point it's going to be too difficult to extricate the United States militarily from the alliance. And I think that, you know, Trump would face an enormous political backlash if he tried anything like that. Domestic political backlash. But the real threat right now is that I think this division is provocative. You know, there is a kind of looming question, which is, would the American people support a war to defend the Baltic states, which are most vulnerable to Russian aggression, especially if it was a kind of hybrid attack similar to what we saw in Ukraine, where there was some sort of plausible deniability and you didn't see Russians in military uniforms. That's a very realistic scenario. If Putin decides that, in fact, this division is such that he could do something like that, then I think that would effectively destroy the alliance, because if he was not deterred and did not pay a price and that was not war, then, you know, what's the point of having a kind of, you know, mutual defense treaty like NATO, where an attack on one is an attack on all? And I think that Trump adding to those divisions, is playing with fire. And, you know, I mean, we all have to cross our fingers and hold our breath that when he meets with Vladimir Putin in Helsinki on Monday, that he delivers a clear, unambiguous message that if you try anything with the Baltic members of NATO, then you will be dealing with the United States and the rest of our allies.
And we'll be talking about in a very short time. But let me first ask David Herzenhorn to weigh in on this. How nervous are the Europeans? Are they doing? What are they planning for a world without the U.S.?
I don't think they're planning for a world without the U.S. They are nervous. But again, I think we need to take a deep step back and ask, you know, protect.
That's a cross
Europe
between
from,
a deep breath and a step
from,
back.
That's right. Really ask, protect Europe from what? You know, Russia's nuclear arsenal, and I was based in Moscow for 4 years, and I was in Crimea when the little green men showed up. You know, Russia's nuclear arsenal doesn't do any good in the Baltics. You know, this is about Russian conventional military capability. And as we just discussed, you know, domestic politics have, you know, are a huge imperative for everyone. Putin, you know, is almost certainly not going into the Baltics. He understands the cost that would be to his reputation, to his legacies, to his standing with the Russian public. The Russian public does not want to be at war with Europe. Most of the Russian public would actually much more like to be a part of Europe. So what Trump's doing, in a way, is creating a situation where Europe is saying, look, they can't rely on the U.S. They won't rely on the U.S. They're stepping up military cooperation within the EU, allocating billions of euros to create those capabilities for the EU to finally develop the hard power that it's long relied on the U.S. for. And I actually think Europe could do a much better job defending itself than the conventional wisdom suggests. But more importantly, the landscape, the geopolitical landscape, is being redrawn by Trump in a way that will undercut American leadership in the long term. And Europe will be looking to stand on its own. As just the head of the European Council said, if you need a helping hand, you find it at the end of your own arm. And that's the mindset in Europe right now. Whatever president comes or goes, to be ready for Europe to take care of its needs on its own.
I wonder about just if we could just spend a couple of minutes on the sort of the romance of NATO. This is a creation at the end of the Second World War, the Marshall Plan, where the United States stood Europe on its feet and paid a tremendous amount of money to do it. The idea that the United States had rescued Europe and that we and the Europeans would stand forever against the enemy to the east, which at that point was the Soviet Union. There's a kind of a romance about this. Do you think the American people still feel as strongly about NATO as they did in the post-war period? Anybody? Who's wants to talk?
Well, this is Nick. I would just say, Nick Burns, I would just say that the public opinion polls show consistently strong American public support among both Republicans and Democrats for NATO. Some of it, obviously, Linda, is this romantic aftermath of this extraordinary 70-year alliance that we've had, you know, from resisting Stalin to winning the Cold War. But I find it's very modern, NATO. It speaks to our modern needs because, again, you think of a problem in the world that we Americans need to confront. Ordinarily, the closest ally who wants to help is Europe and Canada. We can't leave Canada out of this. And Linda, I was the American ambassador to NATO on September 11, 2001. We and NATO had never had to fight together because we deterred the Soviets. When we were hit hard on 9/11, within hours, the Canadians and the Europeans came to me in Brussels and came to our leaders in Washington and said, we want to invoke Article 5 of the NATO Treaty. An attack on one is an attack on all. They did it. They all went into Afghanistan with us. They're all still there 17 years later. So frankly, when I hear President Trump tell an audience in Great Falls, Montana last week, as he did, that we should be schmucks, is his words, to think that NATO does anything for us, I remember 9/11. And I know that those troops are still there today, fighting with us, dying with us, and they're in the Middle East with us. So I find that NATO is directly relevant to what we are facing as a country today. We're not going to find better allies anywhere in the world.
Thank you very much. We are looking at a discussion which is going to go on for a little while. We're going to move on to Mr. Putin and the possibility that Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin will have a nice time together after this is over. Ambassador Nicholas Burns, David Herzenhorn from Politico, and Eli Lake from Bloomberg, stay with us. We're discussing the NATO summit currently underway and President Trump's demands on other allies, whether that will overshadow real and pressing security issues facing the organization. You can join this conversation. Do you think the president's posturing is strategic? Does it make sense? Is it working? I'm Linda Wertheimer, and this is On Point.
This This is Peter Sagal. When we began Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we dreamed that our rude jokes would be, in the end, the appropriate way to talk about the news. And look, it happened. Listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Linda Wertheimer. Today, we're talking about the NATO summit in Brussels and whether President Trump could upend a 70-year-old alliance and reshape world order. You can join the conversation. Are you paying attention to Russian aggression in Crimea? Are you thinking ahead to Trump's meeting with Putin? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me today is David Herzenhorn, chief Brussels correspondent for Politico Europe, former NATO ambassador Nicholas Burns, and Bloomberg columnist Eli Lake. Overshadowing much of this year's NATO summit is the president's upcoming meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. What will happen when the two adversaries sit down is anyone's guess, but as he boarded Air Force One yesterday, President Trump had this to say about his week in Europe.
So I have NATO, I have the UK, which is in somewhat turmoil, and I have Putin. Frankly, Putin may be the easiest of them all. Who would think? Who would think? But the UK certainly has they have a lot of things going on.
That's the helicopter, the presidential helicopter in the background. David Herzenhorn is the chief Brussels correspondent for Politico in Europe. David, thank you very much for all of the information that you have been giving us. I'm wondering about the meeting with Putin. Are people talking about it at the summit?
There's no question, and there's quite a bit of relief on the one hand that this NATO summit is happening before Trump goes to see Putin. So at the very least, they can make an attempt to remind him of certain basic facts and figures and positions, especially on Crimea, on Ukraine, on Russia sanctions, and just to reinforce the general need to speak with one voice in the face of Russian aggression and violations of international law. But there's quite a lot of concern, given Trump's unpredictability, that he could end up sitting across the table from Putin and giving away something or saying something that nobody expects or could predict.
We have a caller, Andrew from South Hadley, Massachusetts, who is kind of worried about the same kind of thing. Andrew?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. So early on in the last election, somebody that had done business with Donald Trump before made this statement that when Donald Trump feels like his back against the wall, he will burn the place down to protect himself. So if you can imagine a scenario where Mueller is going to expose Donald Trump's worst fears about what he's done, start a worldwide trade war, drive a wedge between NATO countries. He's contributed to try to break up the EU. He tried to talk France and Macron into backing out of the EU. What better way to burn the place down but to cause all this trouble and try and support Russia?
So what about you, Nicholas Burns? Do you think that the president is in some kind of a position in which he might make some sort of arrangements with Mr. Putin when he talks to him? What do you think they're going to do?
Well, I think it's good that they're meeting because we have a very difficult relationship with Russia. It's at a very low point right now in terms of trust. The immediate issue is we've got to go back to trying to perpetuate reductions and stabilizing nuclear weapons balance between us. The Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty of 1987 is now in question. So they've got to do arms control. The bigger worry is that the president is going to stay true to practice and be relatively uncritical of Putin, not bring up the annexation of Crimea, not bring up Putin's interference in the U.S. national elections of 2016, and not bring up the nerve agent attack that has now claimed a victim. A woman died this week in the United Kingdom because of that nerve agent attack. Russia's under sanctions for all of this. The president doesn't appear to believe in the sanctions. He doesn't criticize the Russians. And so if the optics of the meeting in Helsinki next Monday are that Putin and Trump are having a nice fraternal talk, and yet he's been scolding the Europeans, that hurts NATO. And that sends the wrong message to Putin.
What about, what do you think, Eli Lake? This is a very, I mean, there are certain sort of parallels. There was the big G7 meeting, and then when the president went on to Asia, some very surprising things happened. He linked up with the North Korean Kim Jong-un, and we apparently and it appeared to indicate that he had some sort of wonderful agreement with him. No one can find out exactly what was in it. Do you think he is headed for some sort of flashy performance of that kind, do you think, in his meeting with Putin?
Well, I certainly hope not. And at least the message that we've gotten from the White House and others is that it's kind of a get-to-know-you meeting. I still think it's not a good idea to give Putin an audience with the President of the United States. But, you know, in some ways, I think that this is Trump asserting that he is the president and he's not going to be cowed by the Mueller investigation. I think that's part of the motivation, even though it's hard to psychoanalyze him. But more importantly, what we have to notice about the Trump presidency so far, a year and a half in, is that Trump says all kinds of things which suggest a policy of appeasing the Russian predator. And yet he has appointed members of his cabinet, his national security advisor, John Bolton, his Secretary of Defense, Jim Mattis, his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, who are hardline when it comes to Russia. And he has maintained the sanctions that he's criticized. He has, in some cases, gone further than Obama, such as selling defensive weapons, anti-tank weaponry to Ukraine. So in this respect, it's a bit hard to figure out what's going on with Trump, because it's possible that he is unaware that his government has taken this much tougher line. But it's also possible that he is sort of doing this again for effect, which is, I think, kind of explains some of his behavior in the Brussels summit today and this week, which is that he is kind of playing to his domestic base to say he won't be cowed by the globalists. And yet, so far, fingers crossed, the policy has not really reflected his rhetoric.
Now, that is a different way to run a railroad, it seems to me. Nicholas Burns, what do you think? When the president speaks, we're supposed to sort of interpret that he didn't really mean it?
No, I think we've come to the point we've got to take every tweet seriously. It's a presidential statement. It's a statement on behalf of the United States. 35 million people receive those tweets, and many more read them around the world. Linda, I'd say that, you know, to go back to what really made America great over the last 70 years, it was that we relied on our allies to magnify and expand our power. We were confident enough to trade. We were open to managed and legal immigration and taking in refugees, and we supported democracy. Those are four foundations. They're Eisenhower and Reagan, they're Truman and JFK. Every president's believed in them. President Trump is overturning each of them. So what I worry about is that he's weakening, gradually, American power, American influence, the trust that people have in us. That, I think, is the real danger of Donald Trump. He's leading a radical revolution against what made us great internationally. And boy, do you hear that and feel it when you travel overseas, how far we've fallen from grace in the eyes of a lot of our best friends around the world.
But he must know that is the interpretation, and he's certainly hearing from some of his own cabinet members. I mean, Defense Secretary Mattis is very concerned, apparently, about some of the moves that Mr. Trump has made at the NATO alliance. People are talking to him about it. He cannot, surely, this president who places such tremendous value on American strength, surely how can we assume that he knows what he's doing when he is knowledgeably trying to make this country weaker?
Are you asking me, Linda?
Yes.
Oh, well, I would just say that he has an entirely different way of looking at the world. It's framed almost exclusively by trade, trade surpluses and imbalances. He grades our allies on those issues almost solely. He doesn't have a respect for facts or the truth. He doesn't seem to have a basic grounding in American foreign and defense policy. And Eli is right. He's appointed some very fine people to office. If he would just listen to them and be guided by them because he's so inexperienced, then his administration would be better off. But he has a different version of success, I think, in his mind, vision of it, than you or I, or I think even Secretary Mattis or Secretary Pompeo would have.
Let's go on to David, who's in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, and he is a fan of Mr. Trump and Mr. Trump's ways of doing things. Yes.
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
All right. So I'm not going to say that I'm a huge fan of what he is doing, but with what he is doing, he's standing up for us and as a country. And you find out who your friends are when you stand up for yourself. Your friends reach out back to you and say, "Hey, man, what's going on?" And they help out. And your people who are not your friends either harp at you for standing up for yourself and call you a jerk, or they just don't talk to you anymore.
So you think President Trump is doing the right thing here? It feels good to you?
I think he could go about it a better way, but if it's getting the job done, yeah.
Okay. David from Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. Let's also talk to, for a second, Harry, who is calling us from West Lebanon, New Hampshire. And he's bringing some experience in Germany to this discussion. Harry?
Hi, Linda. I lived in Germany, especially in Berlin, for 15 years, and I taught political science at the University of Maryland in Berlin. I just want to throw in one consideration. I don't have a problem to solve here. I have no way of knowing what the solution is or would be. But there were two reasons for the establishment of NATO, not just one. We aren't there and weren't there just to protect Europe against the Russians. That was something of a cover, in my opinion. One other really solid reason for NATO was, and still is, to contain Germany, to keep Germany united with the rest of Europe as much as possible, so that the rest of Europe, which is a huge population compared to the population of Germany, has somebody to look to keep something of a ceiling on the aspirations of Germany. And that other country that's counted on for that has always been the United States. We still occupy Germany. It's not called the occupation anymore. But the truth is, we still occupy Germany. And that is a key factor that I think goes way over the head of Donald Trump. And I'd like to throw that into the discussion.
Anybody want to react to that?
If I could,
sure.
I think it's wrong to say that the United States occupies Germany. The Germans allow the United States in there. The United States does not dictate who's running the country. There are plenty of times when U.S. and German foreign policy are not aligned. It's not, you know, what we would traditionally kind of consider an occupation. There are U.S. forces in Germany, although there are far fewer now than there were during the Cold War. And those forces are there at the invitation of the Germans. And so I think it's important to draw that distinction. But I do think that the caller does make an important point, which is another important element of NATO, is that it's a great way to try to prevent another intra-European war in general, because it makes the European nations allies of one another.
Let me just ask the three of you very quickly to react to something that I've been reading in all the clips that I've been reading, and that is that what is going on here, the Europeans seem to describe this as a dysfunctional marriage between President Trump and his allies in NATO. What do you think about that? Old friends, love each other, fighting a lot.
Well, this is Nick Burns. You know, we've always had disagreements with Europe. 1956, Suez, the Euro missile crises of the 80s with President Reagan, the Iraq War, 2003, the European people, very much against it. And yet we survived them all because we understood that there was something larger at stake. And Eli just talked about it. The fact is that we're bound to each other. And that's really expressed first and foremost in Germany. And our security is tied up with each other. What's different here is that many of the European leaders, these are people in the governments, see President Trump beginning to support authoritarianism and these anti-democratic populists sweeping through the European landscape particularly in Eastern Europe, as opposed to supporting the real people who champion democracy, like Angela Merkel or even Theresa May. I think that's what we have to be careful of now. NATO's going to continue. NATO can't be killed by Donald Trump. Congress won't let it happen. The American people won't let it happen. But our influence can erode quite rapidly if we are seen to be siding with authoritarian governments versus democratic governments.
And you actually think that is worse than seeing NATO shaking and quaking?
I think I was just in four countries over the last 2.5 weeks, European countries, talking to these officials. This is the issue they kept coming back to. It's Trump intervening to support Viktor Orban, the autocratic leader in Hungary, to support Salvini, the new deputy prime minister of Italy, who some people think is a racist and is trying to shut down immigration into Italy. That Trump is throwing his support in private meetings and his public statements behind these people. And he goes after, and he's gone after again this morning, Angela Merkel, who's the champion of democracy in Europe. This, I think, is the issue that could really hurt us if we're not careful.
Thank you very much, Eli. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Eli Lake is a columnist with Bloomberg News. Nicholas Burns served as a U.S. ambassador to NATO from 2001 to 2005. Mr. Ambassador, it's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Linda.
David Herzenhorn is the chief Brussels correspondent for Politico in Europe. David, thank you very much for taking this time to join us. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, the Trump administration takes another swipe at Obamacare. And at stake are billions in payments to insurers with sicker customers. I'm Linda Wertheimer, and you are listening to On Point.